Hey everyone, and welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast. I appreciate you being here. I just wrapped up a great conversation with Ivan Makadonsky, who is chief of staff at Breeze. Breeze is creating some incredible technology to support non-custodial Lightning. It was a very enlightening conversation for me in particular. I've been in Bitcoin for about 2 years, and my technical knowledge of the network has really been limited to layer one. And so he gave a still high level, non-technical, but a good primer on L2s, Lightning specifically, the things they're working on, what they're doing, and was a great resource for me personally. I think it'll be a great resource for you as well. I hope you enjoy the episode. All right, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Ivan here with me. Ivan, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. We've got a lot of exciting things going on, I imagine, at Breeze. We are what seems to be the beginning of a good bull run, so everything gets more exciting in Bitcoin around these times. Wanted to just start at the beginning, though. Let's talk about your Bitcoin origin story. How did you find Bitcoin?
The first time that I've heard it was around 2013, the first bull market and the craziness there. But I didn't pay attention at all. Just a passing thought, some people made some money. But for personal circumstances, I didn't pay attention at all. I had other problems. But in 2020, I met my soulmate, and she bought one Ethereum. And for a year, she was chasing me, come on, let's make money with this. And I wanted to avoid it. I knew it was associated with scams, with other stuff, and I actively did not want to pursue any type of thing. Yeah, but I let her do her thing. And in late 2021, a close friend returned the money that he owed me out of nowhere. And I said, okay, this is the final straw. I'm going to learn all this crypto shit, and I'm going to prove that you're all wrong. That, yeah, you made money, but you just got lucky. And in the process of trying to find the truth, I understood, okay, I was right about crypto, but Bitcoin is a bit different. And I tried to pursue down the truth there, and I found out, okay, this is absolute truth, and this is solving the problems that I didn't know that we had in money. And from that perspective, I became a believer. I explained the things even to my lady. Now we are a full-time Bitcoiners since January 2022. So yeah, that's kind
okay. of Okay. So what was the distinction between Bitcoin and crypto that you identified? What kept you on Bitcoin but away from crypto?
Well, the first thing is the proof of work aspect. But it's not only that, but you have to understand that the proof of work aspect makes any crypto with proof of work a reality, because it's connected to energy, because that is what makes it real. It's not just a story. Yeah, there is a story on top of that, but when it is proof of work, that means that it is real. That makes it tangible. But any proof of stake token, it's just a story. Because that stake is based on fiat, and fiat is again based, we are disconnecting it through from reality more and more. That money previously was used the real things. It was salt, it was stones, it was glass beads, it was gold eventually, because we didn't want to cheat, but it was always something real. And now that we invented the telegraph, now we can click one button and print $1. If we click two, we can print 10. If we click three, we can print 100. And the more, but like every other button that we click, every subsequent button that we click prints 90% more dollars. And To print, let's say, $1,000,000, you need to click 7 buttons. The energy for those 7 buttons is the reality. But the story about money is so disconnected about the value of those $1,000,000 to the value is really the energy it took to produce it. Mm-hmm. And when I understood that, then I tried to go deep into why Bitcoin would be different than the other proof of work tokens. Then you connect it to the network effects and a little bit other technical constraints that Bitcoin puts, like the difficult adjustment, like the 1 megabyte block and all sorts of things. But I would say the network effect is so much stronger than the others that is just a competition again. Just like every other money, why gold beat everything else? Because it was a competition of all the possible money, and it was just captured. And now we're disconnecting money more and more from reality, and we're basing it on just some fictional story. That is, every time that we print money more and more, we're not digging out more gold. We're just printing money and disconnecting it more and more from reality. And now it is a competition with all the cryptos and with Bitcoin. And because Bitcoin is designed and the connection to reality becomes more and more, that's why it's going to win this competition. Just like any competition out there, let's say steel. Why is steel used for construction? Because it is the most dense energy into one metal, and we can build on top of it. Yes, we can use other stuff, but this is the best thing, and it became the most used because it won the competition out of everything else, but also it won because it is real energy. It's not fictional. The only thing that changed, even when I go back through the history of steel, people didn't believe the story, didn't believe that steel is the future. And they had to be sold that, oh, this elephant is going to walk down this steel bridge in order people to go through that bridge, because there was some type of a myth. Just because they were sold on the story, it didn't change the reality of the steel. Steel was steel. Just our perception changed. And this is what's happening right now with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is connected more and more to reality, to real life energy, and it's outcompeting everything else. The only thing that has to follow, just like steel, is our perception that we collectively are going to understand consequences of disconnecting and connecting to reality. And the people that are using the things that are more and more disconnected to reality, that is what's going to collapse. Bitcoin is steady, but when you compare Bitcoin to things that are collapsing, it looks like that Bitcoin is going up. So I can go on a tangent there, but that's why Bitcoin is completely different than everything else.
I like that explanation. It's, I think the proof of work mechanism, I think, is pretty well understood by Bitcoiners, certainly people working in the space. It is so underappreciated by anyone who's only gotten a quick explanation of it or hasn't dug into it. But the more I think on this connection between real world energy and this digital value of Bitcoin, it just becomes more and more apparent. And I think if the better we get as Bitcoiners at articulating that, like why it's necessary, from, to your point, tying it to the real world, but also securing the network. I mean, just mechanically, I think the better we're going to be at onboarding more and more people into this revolution.
Need to explain it by comparing it. What is a fiction? What is just a story, and what is a reality? Mm-hmm. And I think that is why Bitcoin is attracting so many engineers, because engineers by nature, they don't think of a story and try to impose it on the world, but they observe the world and create the story of understanding the reality. It's not the other way around. The Keynesian economists, they're trying to push a story that they invented that is disconnected to reality. And when you try to push a story, you're going to push with real energy, but you're trying to defend this fiction. And the only thing is, like, can you actually hypnotize people to still believe this fiction? At some point, the fiction will collapse to reality. Just like I explained, right now to print $1 million, you need to click 10 but 7 buttons, 1 and 6 zeros. And the realness of those $1 million is, again, the energy to press the buttons, which is so much disconnected to the value that we put on those $1 million. Because if we dig $1 million worth of value in gold, that is the real thing. It's, again, the energy, the delta between the energy for producing and for the value that we put it on, it's not so disconnected. Like, let's say the clicking the 7 buttons, it's 7 units of energy. But the $1 million in our minds, it represents, I don't know, let's say 1 billion times more energy. But it's really not. Only our perception is what's lying. And obviously, people would accept those $1 million as it is. But on a societal level, that fiction will collapse more and more with each print. And the thing is that when you print $1 million, the fiction is this amount. When you print a trillion, it's even more. It's disconnecting more and more. And people, even if they can't explain it, you cannot escape real life consequences. And real life is energy. It's not the fiction that you're sold.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way of framing it. So something that comes to my mind is, you think about, yes, like this minute amount of energy that goes into the creation of $1 million in a fiat economy, whether it's through bank lending or you know, central banking. But if you were to, you know, build $1 million home, think about the labor, the lumber, the raw materials, the need to extract some of that from the ground or from the forest or wherever, all of the energy that goes into producing that home versus the energy that went into the production of the currency to purchase the home. It's obviously so out of balance when you paint it like that. That's an interesting. So what is the aspect of Bitcoin then that you would say resonates most with you? Is it sort of its censorship resistance? Is it its scarcity? Like, what are the, of these, you know, sort of buzzwords that you hear? Like, what's the thing where you're like, that's kind of what draws me in?
I would say why it completely captured me is I didn't realize this aspect of the realness and the fiction when I studied. But the Jason Lowry's thesis is basically explaining the realness and the fiction, that real life power is a bomb, is a tank, is steel. Again, this is real life energy, real life power. And the fiction is a judge, a scepter of a king. Those are symbols of real power, but no, it's just a fiction. That's not the actual power. And why this completely captured me is because my personal story is that my mother was killed because of money. And I had to deal with all the problems associated with that. That all the fictions that we were told about 2008, it had real life consequences to me, second and third order, that it created problems in my mother's life. And eventually somebody decided to kill her because she had a little bit more, or for whatever reason. Real life consequences because of, again, that fictional story. And when I heard him that about this power projection, that this is, again, life, this is what we're trying to do to survive, that we want to protect our energy, not everything else. And when you're stolen from exploitation or other ways through money, it has real life consequences. And for me, it was this. And I found out that the money that you can have in Bitcoin, in a form of Bitcoin, it represents real power and optionality, that if my mother had her assets and her money in Bitcoin, and when they killed her, they were going to think about, do we want all that money to die with her? And that is the thing that completely captured me. And I said, I don't care what I need to do in this space, but I must contribute, because I was put in this position to understand it on this deep level. So I must bring more and more people, because we live in this fictional story again, and it will have real life consequences for a lot of people. In the past, it was nation states war, but I'm saying that it will have that type of repercussions for a lot of people. It doesn't have to be a nation state war. It is enough for a person not to be able to afford food and kill somebody on the street just to eat, because we are forced to survive. We cannot escape consequences of reality, that we need energy in a form of eating to live. And if our survival is questioned, we will break the fictional stories of laws or anything else in order to survive. And that's why it really captured me. And that is the thing that I really dislike, that even Bitcoiners don't really completely realize what Jason Larry is saying, that he's basing it on reality. And we want to stick with the story of Bitcoin is money. Yes, the money is a story. But why Bitcoin is the best money is because it's directly connected to reality. We are not disconnecting it. And even when hash rate goes up, that means that the money is connected even more to real life energy, other than everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, I'm so sorry to hear about your mother. I think it's telling, you know, some of the most passionate Bitcoiners I know. So like Tony, a partner at the Bitcoin Way here, he was in Lebanon as the currency collapsed. And he talks about, you know, the horrors that you witness in that sort of scenario. And so many of us, like, you know, in the West in particular, just it's we're so far removed from what that reality is and the path that it takes to get there, which is effectively fiat money, that we have a hard time really relating and understanding the potential risk that, you know, like this fire that we're playing with, you know, the game that we're playing with fiat money. So it's unsurprising to me that someone who speaks as passionately as you do about Bitcoin and talks about the real world implications would come from such a background. I'd like to, if you're good, you're ready, I'd like to shift a little bit to Breeze. I want to hear about what you do there, what you're working on. So let's just start with, how did you end up at Breeze? Obviously, I know why you wanted to end up in the Bitcoin space now. What do you do as chief of staff? Tell me a bit about that.
I reached out to Breeze a little bit. There was luck involved, but when I realized that I need to contribute to the space, I just started contributing, not asking for permission or not expecting a salary, but I just said, I'm going to give as much as possible and I will look for opportunity when it presents itself. And the opportunity that presented itself is that Greg Foss, Jeff Booth, Natalie Bruneau came to my hometown for a conference. And I said, okay, I must make an impression to those guys, because it's an opportunity that's coming to me. And I played my cards a little bit strategically, how to make an impression there. And the graciousness and the character of those people said, okay, they actually introduced me to Breeze. And out of all the interviews, it wasn't a given or anything. Out of all the interviews for the chief of staff position, Roy decided to go with me, our CEO. And they were looking basically for a versatile character that can do a lot of stuff, not specializing on one thing. And in my fiat careers, I switched positions and entrepreneurship and all sorts of things. So it was a very, very good fit. And that's kind of what I do. I don't do any development, I'm not a programmer, but anything that is not development, it's possibly handled by me. Support, QA testing, we order something for the team, organizing, logistics, a little bit of marketing, data analytics. So, yeah, it's fun for me because it fits my character, but also this is what the need of Breeze was. So, again, it was a natural fit for both of us.
So I'm a bit out of my league when we start talking L2. So I've only been in Bitcoin since 2022, so 2 years, and most of my technical knowledge is sort of base layer, L1. Could you explain like what this concept of layer twos, of L2s, and then let's talk a bit about Lightning, and then we'll move into what Breeze does specifically.
Yes. The first of all, to explain layer one, and Jeff Booth explains it very well with the blockchain trilemma. That in the blockchain trilemma, there are three relevant factors. You need decentralization. It's not that you need, but decentralization is one point, security is the other, and scalability is the third point. But you can choose only two out of those three to make it something. And Bitcoin intentionally said we're going to focus on security through proof of work and decentralization by reducing the block sizes and other stuff. So it can be completely decentralized. And that is the first thing ever in history that we have available. Because if you sacrifice security through proof of stake, that means that you're unsecure. Do we want that? Obviously not. And the proof of stake mechanisms is basically that at some point, again, they're disconnected through reality and it's going to collapse, just like fiat. But obviously, the other crypto will fall before all the fiat. And the centralization, obviously, is what we have right now, with central banks or with big tech companies. They are centralizing into smaller and smaller points of failure. No matter how big they are, you just need to corrupt that point of failure and the whole system collapses. And when we optimize for those two points, we actually intentionally sacrifice scalability. Which means that we can't transact a lot on the first layer, but on average, it's about 7 transactions per second on the Bitcoin blockchain. And layer twos are basically that. They're trying to solve the problem of the scalability. Because on the first layer, we have the security and the decentralization. We're going to abstract it on a second layer, how we can scale better. Obviously, on third layer, it will be on top of the second to be scalable even more. But that's the basic idea. And that problem was known from the beginning. And there were a lot of ideas of layer twos, and even now I think there are more than 50. But the Lightning Network is the most developed mechanism, and also it's a mechanism where it doesn't sacrifice decentralization or security on the second layer. Because if we create a custodial solution on the as a second layer, that means that we are sacrificing the centralization. It's basically one company. And even now, if let's say 500 or 1,000 companies implement the Lightning Network as a custodial solutions, we can all transact, all 8 billion. But you can very easily shut down 500 companies, but it will be very hard to shut down 8 billion people to transact. So that is the difficulty for the Lightning Network, that we don't want to create a second layer that is centralized, but we want to connect peers. The value proposition of Bitcoin is peer-to-peer electronic cash has to be preserved as much as possible for the second, third, and on other layers. But that is the idea, to scale it better, because now we have security and decentralization.
Got it. So one of the things that I spoke with Alex Leishman of River Financial, and sort of the way he framed it was, yes, tomorrow we could onboard 8 billion people onto Lightning and Bitcoin could be used as a medium of exchange. And let me just make sure I'm understanding clearly. So the way he framed it was, the challenge today is that you're not self-sovereign if that happens, that there are a handful of wallets that, you know, make it possible, but by and large, you're trusting a third party with custody of the Bitcoin in those channels. Is that, am I understanding that correctly? Is that the right way of framing it?
There's a little nuance, kind of, okay. Right, but a little nuance. So the Lightning Network, how it works, it is the Lightning Network creates an address that we call a channel that is between two entities. It could be two companies, it could be two people, anything. But that means that we take, let's say, one Bitcoin and we put it from, we make one transaction on the first layer and we put it on the second layer, that one Bitcoin. And now on the second layer, we can transact between us as much as we want, obviously within the bounds of that one Bitcoin. We cannot send two Bitcoin with one. Like we put in the second layer only one. So that is the limitation there. But we can make back and forward payments as much as we want, and it's extremely cheap. We don't need to wait for the block. But at some point, let's say we put one Bitcoin, we transact between you and me for a year, half a year, it doesn't matter. And at some point, let's say, oh, I want to settle. Let's say you have half a Bitcoin at the end of the year, and I have half a Bitcoin. And I say, I need my half of the Bitcoin. We make another transaction that we close the channel, which means we make another transaction on the first layer. So to open a channel, it is a transaction on the first layer. And to close a channel, it means to another transaction on the first layer. But between those two transactions, you can have almost infinite amount of transactions for fast and for free. But again, because it is locking that one Bitcoin in to be sent fast and cheap, that again creates this problem. And why Alex said that if we put 1,000 companies to be a custodians, basically, if I buy, let's say again, that example with one Bitcoin through a company, now they will be custodying that Bitcoin for me. That means that I don't have a channel on the Lightning Network, but the company does. And the custodial companies are basically a third layer on top of the second layer. So let's say I have a wallet of Satoshi and you have a wallet of Satoshi and I send you 100 sats. That means that I did not send you Bitcoin, you did not receive Bitcoin, and we didn't use the Lightning Network. What actually happened is wallet of Satoshi within their individual database updated my balance and they updated your balance, but Bitcoin didn't go through the any channels. It was the third layer that is their Excel spreadsheet or their own database. But if we have this, and that's why on this third layer, we can have millions of people. Because it's easy to send that way, but we don't own the Bitcoin on that custodial solution. Wallet of Satoshi has it, and it is in the Lightning Network, because if we want to send, let's say I use Wallet of Satoshi and you use Blink or any other, that, and I send you 100 sats, that means that they update the balance sheet for Wallet of Satoshi that is going out. Wallet of Satoshi is sending through the Lightning Network fast on the second layer, and they update, let's say, Blink on their third layer, their own database that you received. But and that's why Alex said that with 1,000 people, each company can have millions of people, and that that's why we can onboard people within the Lightning Network. But it's basically because those custodial solutions are the third layer. But we are sacrificing the sovereignty, how you said it, and the custody is not within us, but it is with the company. The BRI is application and just the company. We the founders decided that we want to preserve the self-sovereignty. And what actually happens when you have Satoshis in the Breeze app or any app that is using our code is that Breeze is opening a channel to me and Breeze is opening a channel to you. And when I send you sats from my Breeze wallet to your Breeze wallet, that means that it goes from my channel to connected to Breeze to your channel connected to Breeze. And when that payment hops from one to the other channel, there's a small fee, and that is the income for Breeze and the non-custodial nature of Bitcoin. Just like I said, if we have Wallet of Satoshi, Bitcoin didn't travel, and you don't have Bitcoin. You are you're a number in an Excel spreadsheet. With non-custodial Lightning, you're sending actual Bitcoin. The way is it clear? Because I can talk a lot, but I don't know if I'm landing.
No. So I think in general. So then my question would be, and this might be a dumb question, what if you're transacting between Breeze and Wallet of Satoshi then?
Yeah.
What happens? What's the mechanism?
Yeah, the mechanism that means that I send, let's say, 100 sats. That 100 sats travels from my channel to the side of Breeze. Breeze is then connected to Wallet of Satoshi. They send the 100 sats that it ends up in Breeze. And then they open their own spreadsheet and say, okay, we owe you 100 sats that you see in the wallet, but technically, it's an IOU that they said, we received 100 sats for this person or this QR codes, and you need to use it. But it's basically the actual Bitcoin stays within them, but they owe you this. And if you like to withdraw it, to a custodial solution, to the first layer, again, they have that optionality. But when it is this custodial service, that means that, let's say, their node has 200 bitcoins. That means that those 200 bitcoins right now, it's not too, attractive to be attacked. But if Bitcoin becomes a million, it will be very attractive because it's a honeypot. But if you try to attack Breeze or a Phoenix, you basically have to attack everybody, not just one node. Because in the non-custodial nature, we are all individual nodes. With Wallet of Satoshi or any custodial solution, you attack that one node, just like a bank. If you want to take all the money of the people, you don't attack all the people, you attack the bank. And that's why Wallet of Satoshi is a bank that is using Lightning.
So if 8 billion people onboarded to Lightning tomorrow, the entire planet, like that became the preferred medium of exchange. We're on a Bitcoin standard and everyone chose to use Breeze or Phoenix, one of these handful of non-custodial solutions. One, are there technical issues with that? I mean, maybe liquidity, like capacity, but let's assume like the liquidity challenge is resolved. You know, I know 8 billion people would be a lot to onboard, but is the self-sovereignty custodial challenge solved? Like, I mean, have you guys solved that? It's a matter of getting the adoption necessary to these non-custodial solutions and migrating away from like the Wallet of Satoshi options.
Yes. I would say that just because they're custodial, it doesn't mean that they're completely bad, especially right now. Because to have this non-custodial Lightning, that means that you are actually opening channels with Wallet of Satoshi. Because you're just a row in a spreadsheet, you don't open channels. And that's why when you open channels, there's a fee that you have to pay to open a channel. And that's why the custodial solutions have much less fees when you actually transact. And when you want to receive one Satoshi, two Satoshis is a preferred solution, even technically what's happening. But if you accumulate more, non-custodial will be better. Again, it is about the security aspect. Will you risk $2 to be in your pocket, 200, 2,000, 20,000, 20 million? And again, the more the risk that you have, you need to increase the security. And that's why it means that you need to go down in levels. That, okay, I'm not going to put $2 billion on the third layer that somebody else is
custodies for you.
Maybe I'm okay putting 2,000 in a non-custodial Lightning matter, and I'm perfectly fine using a 3 trillion within the first layer, which is eventually going to happen. But the problems again in your scenario is that even right now, if we want to onboard 8 billion people, that means that 8 billion people need to make one transaction to open a channel. And because we can have only 7 transactions per second for the block, that means it will be years for all those 8 billion people to have at least a few channels to transact. And not only that, but you need to manage the liquidity and all this. And additionally, there are some technical issues that are even beyond my comprehension. But again, the idea is that the second layer will be the connective tissue that the third layers will be on top of. Because just like the first layer, it doesn't limit you completely. You can still transact there. But if you want to transact more, you put a second layer. And if you want to transact even more with even more people, with more instances, you create the third layer. And that's basically the idea, that we will stack those layers on top of each other. It's not that, you're limited to use only the first layer. Then Bitcoin will not work. But if you are limited to first and second, it will work better. If you expand it to a third layer, it will work even better. But again, we need to build it slowly in order, again, to preserve, to be trust minimized. There is no completely without trustlessness. But we need to be trust minimized with each layer that is built on top. And that's what we try to preserve with Breeze, to be really peer-to-peer electronic cash. If we insert a person or an entity between us, we're getting away from that.
This episode of the Bitcoin Way podcast is sponsored by us, your friends at the Bitcoin Way. If you rely on a third-party or closed-source hardware wallet for your Bitcoin custody, you are compromising on how you store your wealth. The Bitcoin Way offers white-glove service to help you take full self-custody of your Bitcoin and sleep in peace knowing you've done it right. Like most Bitcoiners, we believe that your Bitcoin stack will one day be worth a lot more than it is today. Go to thebitcoinway.com to sign up for a free consultation with a member of our team. Don't delay on protecting your wealth and reach out today. So my hypothetical of 8 billion people coming onto the network tomorrow is probably the largest infeasibility is that it would take forever for the initial transaction to on the base layer to open the Lightning channel. But in practice, of course, 8 billion people don't come on the network tomorrow. That will happen over the next 5, 10, 20 years, however long it takes. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I think Alex's point, and I don't mean to speak for him, I think what he said though was that there needs to be a way for people to have non-custodial Lightning. My suspicion is a lot of people will choose an easier option, or, you know, like, I think a lot of people don't have the trust issue. I mean, they've been trusting the banks who don't have their money today for so long. I think they're going to, you know, migrate onto a Bitcoin standard in sort of a similar fashion if those options are available. Like, whatever's easiest, I don't care if I have to trust Wallet of Satoshi or there's a potential for censorship because of, you know, this or that. I think a lot of people just aren't going to care. But hopefully, as we reach out and we engage with the non-Bitcoin community, we find a way to explain the value of owning your own keys, having a non-custodial solution on layer twos, and offloading trust with third parties best we can. So I think it's certainly an admirable goal, and one that I think, to Alex's point, we just need to continue to focus on. So is there anything else Breeze is working on that you care to share, or are working on something big and important, and I imagine technically challenging, but is there anything else?
I would say we talked about the liquidity issues there, and but our main focus is that we're known for the app that is used like a wallet. Within the app, we have also a podcasting player where you can send satoshis. And within the app, we were the first one to create a point of sale system. Again, another UX and within the app, but we focused to build the infrastructure for the Lightning system right now. And we create a code where we don't want to create apps. We just give you an SDK, which is a software development kit, or a code that you can develop an app. You can create the interface. You can put the button here. You can have a game. You can have a broker. But you don't know about the Lightning technical stuff. And you just get our code and you put it, okay, this is the receive button. You put in our code and you receive via the Lightning network. This is the send button. This is the whatever button. And we... you don't need to develop the backend. You just need to develop the front end of your application, and you can be connected to the Lightning network. That is our focus in Breeze, because we need to scale the usability of the Lightning network. And when you there's also one very big distinction about the custodial solutions and the non-custodial. If right now, let's say, we created Breeze to be a custodial solution and we plug it into one application, whatever it is. That means that technically we are making that application to become a bank that is holding funds for somebody else. But because we are non-custodial, that means that the companies that plug in that code, they don't have to become a bank. They don't have to get the transmitting licenses, banking licenses, all sorts of things that are impediments. But you just plug in the code and you prove that you don't hold anything for somebody else. And that is a preferred solution for people that want to implement Lightning now, because they see the regulatory environment, what is happening. Because, we talked about Wallet of Satoshi, but also Strike. Strike are doing it in a much more, proper way, because they say we are going to get the licenses first, and then we are going to roll out in particular territories and everything else. But yes, they are a custodial solution, which is technically less challenging than, let's say, Breeze, but there is a lawyering fight that their lawyers and all the taxes and costs that they have that we don't have, they focus a lot on that so they can obtain first the licenses and then roll out their product in a particular jurisdiction. Wallet of Satoshi is operating on free will right now. And if somebody decides to attack it from a regulatory environment and they say, you're a bank, we want to regulate you, they have to hide or run or capitulate and or pay fines or whatever. I don't know what's going to happen if a regulatory environment gets to the second layer, but I imagine it will be done. And that is the big benefit when you implement non-custodial Lightning into applications, because we're not making them hold funds for anybody else. And now they can focus on the technical stuff to actually create apps and not have the cost of, okay, we need to hire lawyers and convince this country to allow us to transact and all those sorts of things. But that's the distinction between Wallet of Satoshi, Strike, and Breeze.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. How are you seeing adoption from like a point of sale perspective? Are there a lot of new businesses coming online, or is this a grind for you to find people who are open-minded to it?
I would say point of sale, it was a test for us internally that we sense that Bitcoin to become widely spread, we need to have these different user experiences. Because what we talked about technically about closing channels, opening channels, all this technical stuff, people don't care. Whether it's custodial that much, they will care because, again, just like fiat, they will not, they cannot escape real life consequences. Because when a regulatory environment shuts down Wallet of Satoshi and you have there, you have to deal with the reality to get your funds from there or whatever. But when it's built on reality, you just need to be competent to use it. Because again, if you're incompetent of using a hammer, you might break your teeth with it. But if you actually understand what is the tool and the best way to use it, you'll be competent and you'll be good and you'll be glad that you have the tool. But people don't understand what really Lightning is, and they expect it to just send and receive funds, and it obeys the same rules that our current banking system has. It's a completely new system, and I advise people just understand the differences and understand the costs. Because, yeah, there is a cost, but if you really understand it, you will choose the proper tool and solution for yourself. That's the idea. It's not to limit or what's the right way, the wrong way. You just know, realize what is the reality and you use it properly.
So a personal question for you is, someone who is working for a company that is really pushing the medium of exchange value prop, that use case, but a serious Bitcoiner who I imagine anticipates holding your Bitcoin for a long, long time and seeing its value appreciate. So you've got like the store of value use case, and you're working on the medium of exchange. How do you think about spending your Bitcoin? Do you even have opportunities to spend your Bitcoin often? And if you do, do you take advantage of it, or are you trying to offload fiat because you just, you know, it's a, you know, melting ice cube?
Yeah. I'm going to spend no matter what. But again, just like first layer, second layer, all those sorts of things, I try to use the proper tool for the proper use case. And the way that I think about it is, if we want to spread adoption, that means that I need to send some sats. That every beginning of the month, when I receive my salary in fiat, and I say, okay, this amount goes for myself for long term, but this amount I put in intentionally to spend it. And let's say it's $50. And for the last 5 months, I've put $50 or $100 or whatever to spend it. And I know what to spend it on, because I am onboarding venues and merchants in my hometown. And I created a community here, and we're pushing on that front, not for Breeze, for my personal life. And when I put $50 in the beginning of the month, in 2 weeks, it happens that I have 60. And it's just a good feeling, first of all, because if I again spend 50, that means that I still save even more than my initial plans in the beginning of the month. So even spending in the bull market, it helps me save more. But the other thing that people don't really realize, but let's say tomorrow I can say you can't buy any more Bitcoin, and there's no more Bitcoin. And you, if you spend 2% of your Bitcoin every year, when are you going to run out?
I'm going to say never.
Yeah. Say more. Why?
Because its value continues to appreciate. Your Bitcoin is going further.
Yeah. And that is the equation that says, okay, so if I'm going to spend 2% of my Bitcoin that I have right now, and I'm going to still get richer, it doesn't really make sense for me not to onboard more people, because it will put even more into the network, and we will push the whole mission and everything further faster. But again, I'm not going to spend 50, 60, 70%, but 1, 2% right now, there is no logical reason. I'm saying that if we don't spend 1% yearly of our stack, that means that we don't want to be connected to the network. We want to be isolated in our own bubble to save ourselves and not care about other people. Mm. And I, with my personal story, I care about the other people, and I'm glad to share some of the sats. So when I send them $10 and in 2 months they see that they're 15, they start asking me why this thing happens, and we continue to do so, and they don't know that I am actually saving them, but they will experience it. Because tying it to the beginning of the conversation, I know the reality, and you know the reality as Bitcoiners, what is going to happen with fiat. They live in the fictional story world, and I am trying to connect them back to reality so they don't have that real life cost of collapsing the fiction, and they don't have anything. I want to connect them to real life consequences, and I'm glad to spend 2% of the Bitcoin stack that I currently have. And that's the beauty, that even if I spend 2%, I save even more. So at the end of the year, I'm never at 28%. So there is no logical reason, really, if we want Bitcoin adoption, not to spend Bitcoin. Again, when I say spend, it doesn't mean spend 50% or anything, mm-hmm. or especially spend all of it. But if you don't, you're not spending some of it, that means you're really isolating yourself from the network.
Yeah. So it was the premise that you just shared, you know, how much can you spend annually and still never run out of Bitcoin effectively? Was that the, I think I saw something called like the moon calculator or something like that. Have you seen that? It's like, plug in like when you're, how much Bitcoin you have, the date that you, you know, how many years out, that sort of thing. It's kind of an interesting exercise. I don't know if it's, it requires a lot of assumptions, obviously the inflation of, you know, of, fiat supply, the, you know, appreciation of Bitcoin, but, sort of a fun exercise. So speaking of fun, for these last few questions, just want to kind of get your take on a couple of things. Best guess, when do you think the majority of businesses globally will take payment in Bitcoin? 51% of businesses globally will say, yes, we accept Bitcoin here. How far out do you think we are?
Actually, I'm not really certain, because this is prevented to happen by the fiction of the regulation, because regulation is not real. Real is, again, energy, physics. That is the real thing. Technically, it should happen faster and faster. But because the fiction is limiting the regulation, just like strike should be global, but it's not, because it's putting a cost and penalties and real life consequences for that fictional reality that they are creating for us. But I would say this, that if banks start putting Bitcoin in treasuries, that means that they're basically opening the doors to open the other doors for actual payments. So I think that is the thing that needs to happen first. Obviously, we have that with the licenses of ETFs. It's a step in that direction, but there are other fictional doors that we need to go through, like licenses. And I don't know. I think it will be within the next 10 years. But again, it really depends which country is going to react how to their fictional reality of fiat. Oh, we need to create more fiat or whatever, and sell this illusion to all the people and restrict them, or they become more and more like El Salvador. Okay, we are going to connect to reality and we collectively decide what's best for us. The bad thing is that countries like El Salvador will be smaller. I'll be shocked if European Union, USA, and China actually switch their stance about Bitcoin, because they have a lot of benefit if they're the richest and everybody else is the poorest. But if they actually see, even if they realize it right now, they can still put a lot of leverage on the rest of the world. But if they, even if they start accumulating right now, that means that their leverage is going to be gone a lot faster. But at some point, it will switch, that leverage will disappear when more and more grassroots adoption and people adopt the Bitcoin standard. And at some point they'll say, okay, we're going to print our own currency into oblivion and buy all the Bitcoins that we can get a hold of. But again, you cannot predict human behavior, especially.
There are so many variables. I understand that when I ask these questions. So any developments over the next 12 to 18 months within Bitcoin that you're excited about, keeping track of?
I'm a Lightning guy, so I try to track what's happening on the Lightning ecosystem, and I can't anymore. Like, it's so much stuff that is coming out that people will be shocked. And the good thing is that, and an advice is, try to figure out how you can actually buy Bitcoin on the second layer directly, because the first layer will become more and more expensive. And whether you use a third layer as a custodial solution, but try to figure out how to buy it on the second layer, because there will be a point where if you want to buy $100 worth of Bitcoin, you might pay a $60 fee for it on the first layer. So it will be very beneficial. And just for an example, what's happening, 2 weeks ago, one company, Relay, which is a broker, which allows people to convert their fiat into Bitcoin, connected with Breeze, with our code, and made a release. And now their 100,000 user base is now connected to Lightning, something that didn't happen. And when people say Lightning is not scalable, watch out for the next year to 2 years. And we're just one company. The solutions that are plugged in to businesses that is not going to onboard people one by one, but groups of people like that will become visible more and more. And it is absolutely possible, because when it is, again, non-custodially, you don't need to go and ask permission from your country, from any regulator. You just need to use the code, and people will rush to have a global payment system into their app.
Yeah. Okay, last question. Some people don't want to answer this one. Bitcoin price predictions for 2024, 2025. We're in a bull run. What are you thinking?
This cycle, I do believe that it will be between 200,000 and a million.
Okay. Yeah, I think 200,000 seems like a pretty safe floor to me. I think a million is very bullish for this cycle, but I'd say my range is probably pretty similar. What gives you that conviction?
I would say this, when I connected to the real things, I watched the hash rate. Hash rate right now is about 3.5 times more than the prices when we were last at 70K. So it, based on reality, Bitcoin can go 3.5 times more than right now. But I don't know, out of fictional minds, how much are we going to stretch reality. And also, I don't know how much more hash rate we are going to put into the bull market. But that is a good indicator to make some, again, fictional story in my mind where it's going to go. But again, US might crack down more on regulatory, not for BlackRock or anybody else, but on people. And that would, again, slow the process and the bull market. But it's just inevitable. Now, when I see the hash rate going up, that means that is the thing that it's important. So when that thing is going up, that means it's more connected to reality. Everything else, when they print more money, it's more disconnected from reality. And I don't know when the fiction is going to collapse.
I think that's a good answer, good place to end the conversation. The one thing I'll add for the audience is just keep in mind, we talk price of Bitcoin. The reality is that one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. The dollar amount doesn't matter. It's just an indication of current value and buying power, but one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. Ivan, hey, thank you so much for the time today, man. Give us a send off, where to find you online, Breeze, anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I am one of the two more visible people in our team. You can find me on X, Twitter, on Noster, on LinkedIn, wherever you like. My handles are NACKOO2000, NACKOO2000. Anything about Breeze, everything that we do is completely open sourced. So if you like it, use it. If you like to be a design partner to help you for your own use case, again, reach out. We're very reachable and we would love to onboard more and more people because, yeah, we want to spread the network even further.
You guys are fighting the good fight. I appreciate you, what you're doing, and I appreciate you taking time to chat with me today.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed the episode and my conversation with Ivan. I know I sure did. I love what Breeze is doing, their commitment to non-custodial Bitcoin on L2s, and the way that they are going about onboarding as many businesses and individuals as possible. Support them, check them out online. Would really encourage you to give them a follow and look at the things they're doing. And of course, check out the Bitcoin Way. You can find us on Twitter, X at the Bitcoin Way _ or the bitcoinway.com. If you want to follow me, I'm at the other M Jordan on Twitter and X. And you can check out my newsletter as well. Substack, it's blackhatbitcoin.substack.com, where I write just like a brief weekly newsletter on basic Bitcoin and news and that sort of thing. So check it out. Give this video a like, subscribe to the channel, share it with someone. Anything you can do to support this podcast would mean a lot to us, especially in these early days. Thank you so much. Take care. And this is Michael Jordan signing off for now.